So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
It's Thanksgiving week, and you have plans. What are you planning to do? What are you making? Better question is, what are you making? I remember when my sister had her first Thanksgiving. They're a Navy family, and they're out of town and away from everyone. And her first Thanksgiving, Mary, they weren't able to be with us. And I remember, I'm like, I can't believe you didn't cook a whole turkey. She said, well, we weren't going to eat a whole turkey, so I just got a piece of turkey. And it's so fascinating. You know, we have our mindset on certain ways of celebrating Thanksgiving. And I think my go-to is that I have to have turkey, mashed potatoes, cranberries, some sort of like a sweet, savory, you know, something such as, you know, the sweet potatoes. I eat a lot of sweet potatoes though, so I'm going for yams now. Yeah, those are just some of the things that have to be there. It's so important. What is it for you? Canned cranberries? Okay, that's a travesty. We make fresh cranberries from scratch. I actually refuse. Oh, I don't refuse. It sounds rude, but like, I don't really go for the canned cranberries, but you know, that's all that a lot of people ever do. We've always made them from scratch. It's actually really simple. Cinnamon, orange juice, orange zest, a little bit of sugar. Okay, I digress. I'm very excited. And I'm hosting Thanksgiving for the first time this year. We're far away from our whole family. It's been really difficult with the move, but we do have some family that will be here with us. So, man, it's a lot to get all the odds and ends for hosting like a formal meal like this. Anyways, I digress. I hope you guys are traveling safe, enjoying a little bit of time off, or anticipating that time off. Joining me in just a little bit will be Father Tim Grumbach. He's the associate pastor. Or not even associate pastor anymore. He is the chaplain at Bishop Alemany High School in the Diocese of Los Angeles. And we're going to be talking about the virtual reality metaverse concerts occurring, such as the one that just happened with Justin Bieber, and how this ties into the whole transhumanism move and this increase in what we're seeing with isolation. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that the virtual reality, meta, all of this is building us in greater communities, drawing us closer together, or fueling further isolation? We're also going to talk about how important gratitude is in our lives. That is Thanksgiving, being grateful for things, and how this is connected to the Eucharist. I also mentioned yesterday that we were going to unpack, does having kids make you happier? Why are we talking about this? Because a lot of people are choosing to have kids or not to have kids. I'm not talking about someone struggling with fertility. And many people have asked, well, how do you convince someone to have a kid? And I think that there's a lot more in this conversation that needs to occur. But the first thing is, we have to debunk this whole idea that people who have children are less happy. So we'll talk about that later on during the show. Right now, though, I want to unpack a very important topic, and that is parents. We talk a lot about being a parent here on Trending, and I think we need to talk about it a little bit more. And here's why. There was audio recently leaked of seventh grade teachers conspiring together and recruiting other teachers to do the same, an agenda they have out to undermine parents and to promote and recruit kids to LGBTQ clubs. Now, there's a whole lot more to this story. This is coming out of audio that was leaked, but someone went in undercover to the California Teachers Association conference and recorded, reviewed, went to the talks. You know, I'm going to vote. You know, this person's going by a pseudonym. The one's going by Rebecca Murphy. I think my theory is this is a rock solid mom who is going in undercover and wants to know what is happening. What are teachers talking about covering and talking about recruiting and everything they do with our kids? Now, you may not be a parent and think, you know, this isn't related to me, but it is. Because here's the reality. What this is, what we're seeing here, are activists who don't have children, who are going in and targeting your children to join their so-called revolution, their agenda. So you may not be a parent, but our peers who aren't parents either, or maybe they are recruiting other people's kids. And we need to understand, how does a movement grow into what it is? recruitment? How do people fight for causes? Because they're convinced it's a cause worth fighting for. And that's what's happening in school. So whether it's happening to a kid who's not your kid or a friend who is your friend and someone you know, we should be more aware and address this specific issue. So here's what happened. Again, a woman, I'm going to say a rock solid mom in California, going by the pseudonym of Rebecca Murphy, went in undercover to the California Teachers Association conference this fall. She's since then leaked audio having to do with a number of things, one of which includes two teachers, seventh grade teachers. Seventh graders, aren't they about 11-ish years old? Well, so here's the deal. These teachers across the board at the conference, in the talks that were being given during the California Teachers Association conference, they were mocking parents and suggesting that they as teachers know better than parents. In fact, there were comments made that some believed that parents should be jailed and imprisoned for not going along with LGBTQ ideology that some children might be living out. So if a parent doesn't call their child by this new pronoun that they want to be called by, then the teachers believe that those parents should be jailed. You see, the other thing that we saw happening in some of the undercover audio and research that was done during the sold-out California Teachers Association conference was that there were actually two teachers who were talking about how they recruit kids to the LGBTQ clubs. In other words, how they groom children into an LGBTQ identity, ideology, into promoting it. Now, please remember, and I have to emphasize this, the LGBTQ community is very, very, very involved within the school systems in grooming children into areas having to do with adult and minor physical contact and engagement. The whole man-boy love movement that we hear about, that people will often joke about that isn't funny, is very normal and it's happening going within into our schools. It's also contributing to this increase in pornography. It's encouraging pornography. If we were to just touch on some of the curriculum alone that California teachers and other teachers across the nation, because you may not live in California, but where California goes, the other major cities go, and there goes the rest of the nation. And we've seen this across the country, where five-year-olds are coloring books about sexual things they shouldn't even be hearing about. So, first things first. I think important thing is to understand that across the board in the majority of these talks, teachers were showing their outright animus towards parents and their intentional undermining of parents. Get a reality check as a teacher, and this is something that parents have to call teachers out on. That teachers are meant to serve at the will of the parents. And these teachers have a fake assumption that they know what's best in a classroom of, let's say, on a low side average of about 20 students that they see for 1 year. And in seventh grade, let's be real, they're there for one, maybe two periods throughout the day. This falls back to the important fundamental understanding as married couples, as parents, the responsibility to the education of your child. Not to outsource education, but to the education of your children. And that's what's so important, I think, in this entire conversation that's going down. Now, some of the teachers' comments, remember, we're talking about their comments with regard to 11-year-olds that they're recruiting, had to do with how parents who, I already mentioned, should be jailed if they don't go along with a child's sudden new gender identity. They also talked about how to implement recruitment surveillance techniques to recruit kids into the LGBTQ clubs. They were talking about how they would monitor the social media use of these kids, and if they thought something that could possibly lead them to being interested in anything LGBTQ, well, then they slide right in and start drawing them in with what tactics they can from looking at their search history on their computers. Now, these teachers were also advising one another to not keep a club roster for the LGBTQ clubs. But that way, if a parent asks if their child belongs to this club, there's no record. They won't know. So in other words, hide things from parents, undermine parents. You may have heard of a woman by the name of Abigail Schreer. I've mentioned her here on Trending. She's the author of a recent book last year titled Irreversible Damage, A Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. 10 out of 10 recommend. I've talked to so many of my friends who are school teachers who are working in public health care, and they are seeing this trend is true. A mass number of teenage girls and young women, college age, who are suddenly coming out as transgender in groups. They're going for sex changes. They're going for hormone replacement therapy, all of this. Now, Abigail Schreer isn't someone who is a fan of what you could say the conservative Christian mindset with regard to sexuality, morality, and family. In fact, Abigail Schreer is all for transgender identity for adults. I think her mind might be changing, though. Because here's the deal, she's being canceled over and over again for what she's had to share, because she's been a mainstream writer for many years. And she said this about what's happening with this undercover audio that was released from the California Teachers Association of two seventh grade teachers talking about undermining parents and recruiting them to LGBTQ identities, ideologies, and clubs. Abigail Schreer said, "Parents can never underestimate the level of deception and manipulation that activist teachers are willing to go to in issues of gender." Do you understand what she's saying here? Don't underestimate teachers. Don't underestimate these activists who will do anything to convert people to the LGBTQ identity. I heard from a parent just a couple of weeks ago who said they thought everything was okay. Their kid was just occasionally using Pinterest. They weren't on social media. They discovered that the LGBTQ movement is even recruiting on Pinterest. They were sharing about how it's not just sketchy chat rooms that you have to watch out for, but it's the whole idea of understanding that the LGBT community, those activists, are building one-on-one personal relationships with children online in the school systems to bring them around to their ideology, to their agenda. Abigail Schreer referred to these as activist teachers who are looking to recruit other people's children. It is creepy. And so here are some of the solutions. Because it's getting worse, and I'm hearing from parents across the nation in droves. I don't know what to do. My kid suddenly identifying as LGBTQ out of nowhere. I've actually heard from multiple parents who said their kids had this strong propensity toward religion and faith, and some even talking about a religious vocation that they were interested in at such a young age. And the idea of becoming a religious sister or priest one day, and all of a sudden that's gone. They hate God, they don't want to hear anything about God, they don't want to pray, and they're all about this LGBTQ identity. They're saying that they're bisexual, and they're wanting to come out with a new identity. So what are the solutions as it's getting worse? Well, public school seems more and more as if it's off the table for people of faith. For anyone who promotes a traditional worldview surrounding marriage, male and female, and might I dare say belief in God and that he created our body with a purpose, and that there's a blueprint for life and he's got it right. Not everyone can afford private school. Now, if a private school, I always say good private schools, because unfortunately, even in a lot of our private Catholic schools aren't very solid. Homeschooling's an option, charter school's an option, remembering that there are great scholarships available through many parishes as well if you have a good Catholic school in your area. And that even student scholarships for more than one child, if you have multiple children in the same school, those are also available as well. Not everyone knows this. But at the end of the day, you as a parent are the primary educator of your child. You can't just outsource education. You have to work on the education, vet the education, move a kid when necessary. And the reality is I've heard from even parents in various schools, public and private, where they've just tried over and over again discussing things with school teachers, superintendents, principals, and nothing changed. So they needed to move on, whatever that solution might be in your community. This is the importance of regular conversations with kids, that you address these issues that are happening in the culture and don't just outsource this to an education system, even if you do trust the teacher. This shows the importance of accountability for ourselves and our responsibility and our vocation to parenthood, but also accountability to the teachers, educators, and our kids and the conversations we're having with them. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. I'm going to be right back with Father Tim Grumbach. And as we approach Thanksgiving, we're going to talk about the importance of gratitude. That is Thanksgiving and its connection to the Eucharist. We're also going to talk about the recent Bieber virtual reality concert, talking about metaverse and transhumanism. We'll be right back here on Trending. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Who attended the recent virtual reality Bieber concert in the Bieberverse? I can't believe there is an actual Bieberverse already. People are so obsessed with Justin Bieber. Anyways, we're going to talk about that in a moment. We're going to talk about that concert, virtual reality, the tie into transhumanism, and how all of this ties in with a lot of the trends we're seeing in the culture surrounding depression, isolation, loneliness. Why? Well, we'll get to that in just a second. Joining me now is Father Tim Grumbach. Father Tim Grumbach is the chaplain at Bishop Alemany High School in the Diocese of Los Angeles, serving the young high school students there, bringing them to Christ. And today we're going to talk about the importance of gratitude, that is Thanksgiving, and its connection to the Eucharist as we approach our Thanksgiving holiday here in the United States. Father Tim, welcome back to Trending.
Thank you so much. It's always such a joy to be here. And I just want to give a little shout out to our athletes here at Bishop Alemany. Our football team has their championship game for the CIF on Friday night. Our volleyball girls won their CIF division just a couple weeks ago. There's a lot to be thankful for here on campus, but especially since this is a Catholic community of excellence, in sports. But we're really trying to build up that, men and women who know how to give thanks and give themselves to God and to one another.
Very, very exciting news there for your athletes. Let's dive in to so much. I want to get into what you're doing there at the high school more so as well, because I know you're in an uphill battle surrounding this culture that has to do so much so with the approach of negativity toward Christ, even within our schools at times. And this is a conversation I want to unpack more at a later date. But today I'd like to dive into the importance of Thanksgiving, gratitude, and its connection to the Eucharist. I know in my own life I've seen trends up and downs where, various things will occur, and I'll just ponder how, wow, I think that if I really worked on being more grateful for what I have, that this will kind of put me in check and have better perspective for what's happening. So I've mentioned here on Trending before, one of my favorite habits to turn back to at various phases in my life where, I'm not quite on track, where I'll take my rosary and, of course, are already making sure we pray our rosary, but using each and every single bead and praying on each bead in Thanksgiving for something I'm grateful for. And I mean, that's over what, 50, that's like more than 60 thank yous for like a different person, a quality in a person. It was something or someone that you encountered today, the gift of your home, the land you live on, all these different things. You find, wow, like I have a lot. I don't need to be sorrowful, angry, jealous, harboring resentment or depressed or lonely. And this simple exercise, Father Tim, has always stood out to me, especially as we come around the time of Thanksgiving and so many of the frustrating moments we have in life, how a little more gratitude can really transform our day-to-day outlook.
I would even say that Thanksgiving is what makes us who we are as Christians and specifically as Catholics. I've been thinking a lot about this over the last few months, especially since May, when I had an opportunity to spend a week with some missionaries who were just finishing up their mission year, you know, traveling around and doing retreats for high schoolers and middle schoolers. And kind of at the height of their wrap-up week, one night they were doing this great praise and worship session, and they're so charismatic, and they just, you know, the room shakes when they praise and worship. And it was all about Thanksgiving. And so it kind of began with thanking God for all the priests that took care of them sacramentally, all the families that took them into their homes while they were on mission, all the students that they served, all the retreats that they did. And it actually finished with, you know, how about your sufferings, the places where you felt like there was lack? And it was just so strange to think that that's a vital part of our act of Thanksgiving as Catholics, is that, you know, the world looks at Thanksgiving and says, even the secular world can say, in the midst of so much suffering right now, that we need to be thankful for our blessings or whatever gifts that we have, the good things. But we as Catholics are like, we're going to take one further. You know, not only are we going to be thankful for our blessings, we're going to be thankful for our sufferings and our lack. And so we have a very different relationship with Thanksgiving than the rest of the world does, because we not only get to the end of the day and can thank God for the blessings that we've seen, but we can also say, you know, God, there's something missing in my life, or there's some kind of suffering, but I thank you for it, because if it's not beautiful, it means you're not done yet, Lord. And I know you're still going to do something amazing. And so we have a very different relationship with Thanksgiving.
You know, and this whole idea ties into the attitude about materialism we have as well today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how we're called to look beyond the material, not away from it. It's a part of it, but for it to be transcended. You know, like yesterday, mm-hmm. here on Trending, I walked through the four levels of happiness that Father Robert Spitzer from the Magis Center lays out, and how you progress in happiness basically from this material happiness, the self-seeking happiness, into, you know, this idea of contributing to the world in a transcendent desire that isn't just our base human desires. And I think all of this comes back to, you know, those simple ideas of the examination of conscience at the end of the day, having a perspective that goes beyond ourselves, but also sees in gratitude what we do indeed have and the providential gift of what it is.
And it might be a good way to do one's examination of conscience. I mean, there's so many beautiful ways to do it, but to set up three things is to look through your day and say, where were the ways that I did what I had to, and it was an obligation. And even if it was suffering and I really didn't want to do it, I did it. And then what are the blessings that I received? You know, what did I do because it felt good to do it? And then finally, what did I do because it gave me the opportunity to give myself away, right? As Father Robert Spitzer would say then, as you just said, how do we contribute? How do we give ourselves away? And so that's, you know, really at the heart of any spiritual development, is going from obligation to blessing, and then finally, ultimately, to giving oneself away. And so I think that would be a good way for us to spend our evenings, is to look at our day and see, you know, what did we do that we had to do? What did we do that we wanted to do? And what did we do so that we can actually love and give ourselves away?
I remember, I think it was only one time ever that we did this at Thanksgiving. I remember, you know, there's more where people said, oh, okay, you know, before we eat, let's all just go around saying one thing that we're grateful for. And it was so awkward. No one wanted to share. No one wanted to say that one thing that they were thankful for. I think so many people copped out and said, like, the food or the people who were there, which are great things. But, I mean, very generic. Yes, I know I'm being terrible in judging the things that people were saying they're grateful for. And they should be grateful for those things. But it's so funny because when we come to, like, Thanksgiving Day, you know, it really just becomes about the food, and we don't really do anything else. And I remember years ago, we should start the day with Mass. Mass should be at the heart of Thanksgiving, because the Eucharist is the fulfillment of what's known in the Jewish tradition of the Todah sacrifice. And the Todah sacrifice is known as the thank offering. And this is what the Eucharist, one of the fundamental things that is fulfilled from the Old Testament into the New Testament, that the Eucharist is the new thank offering. But it's not just something that we're offering as human beings, but it's that we are receiving the King of the universe in the Eucharist, body, blood, soul, and divinity, and we're giving to him ourselves in the midst of everything we are, everything we have, presenting ourselves worthily in a state of grace to Him, I think that we miss the fact that the Eucharist, Father Tim, is at the heart of the Thanksgiving celebration that we have here in the United States.
Yeah, and I wonder if, like you said, it was kind of awkward to come up with something, for people to come up with something to say they were thankful for. And I wonder if that might be because a true act of thanksgiving is a very vulnerable thing, because it's when you recognize that you had some lack, you were missing something, and you maybe even deserve it, but somebody was able to fulfill that lack, to give you what you needed most. And then you have to humble yourself and say, I'm thankful for you, that what I didn't have, what I didn't deserve, that you gave to me. And it becomes a relationship, a living relationship. And so as Catholics, our relationship with the living God is a relationship of humble and vulnerable thanksgiving. And you're right, that nowhere more powerfully than in the Eucharist. And I was just thinking scripturally, you know, the only miracle other than the resurrection itself that appears in every one of the four Gospels is the breaking of the bread and the feeding of the multitudes, that Jesus feeds thousands upon thousands of people. And with every telling of that story, twice in Matthew and Mark's Gospels, once in Luke's, once in John's, it refers to Jesus either giving the blessing or giving thanks. And that's where we get the word Eucharist from. It's the Greek word that means, you know, a giving of thanks is a way to translate it. And in every one of those situations, it refers to Jesus giving thanks before he breaks it and blesses it and gives it to the people as a miracle. And all that language, you know, Jesus took, he blessed, he broke, and he gave, is all language of the Mass, of the Eucharist. So it was foreshadowing Jesus giving us his body and his blood in the species of bread and wine that we still do at Mass every day. And so that's why Thanksgiving is at the heart of what we do as the Eucharist. And also, you know, like I said, we have a different kind of relationship with Thanksgiving as Catholics than even some of the Christians do, but that the rest of the whole world does, because we know with the Eucharist, it's not just something we do or receive, it's something we become. And so because the Eucharist is the act of Thanksgiving, we don't just give thanks. It's not just something we do, it's something we become. And so the act of Thanksgiving is entering into a living relationship with God that transforms us, makes us into something new, and then becomes a place where the living God dwells among his people on earth. And the earth becomes a temple, and we become the body of Christ. You know, so Thanksgiving is no little thing in Catholic theology and in the lived Christian life.
A lot of people will unpack and dive into, you know, some of the Christian or Catholic roots of the Thanksgiving holiday itself. They'll dive into, you know, the meal of the pilgrims and the gratitude. And I think that all of that is great. All of that is important. We need to understand the history of this great nation, the history of the pilgrims. But it's important at the heart of it, if we're missing the mark when it comes to the fact that at the heart of what the Eucharist is Thanksgiving, then our Thanksgiving in some ways is meaningless if we're leaving Christ out.
Yeah, and you'll see, you know, some paintings, you know, pop up on social media this time of the year talking about the real first Thanksgiving in America. And you'll see images, I think it was in Florida, what we now call Florida, where the first Mass was offered in the land of the United States now. And they say that's the first real Thanksgiving meal that was offered here in this land. And so understanding the Catholic roots of who we are as a nation is really important, especially since the Eucharist is the ultimate act of Thanksgiving. When we celebrate Thanksgiving, yeah, that's right. There's no better way to start the day than to start with Mass.
It's interesting. I was just talking, Patrick pointed this out behind the scenes here, our producer, that it is indeed Thanksgiving is one of the daily Masses. If you go to daily Mass, that is more highly attended. And it's fascinating, Father Tim, because as I think about it, Labor Day, Memorial Day, Thanksgiving, 4th of July are actually some of those days throughout the year that you'll see higher attendance. And I've always kind of just attributed it to the fact that more people had the days off, and so they had an easier means of making it to daily Mass. But I do think it's interesting that people of faith, people who truly see at the heart of everything we have gratitude toward God, that they're choosing on these days off to usually wake up early in the face of the holiday and to go to Mass on these special days marking the history of our nation.
Yeah, I would say that it can be a part of the big Eucharistic revival that our bishops are looking to lead us into over the coming years. I'm thinking a lot about that because I just actually spent the weekend down in Mexico doing a wedding for some friends. And I was in this beautiful city with these beautiful churches. And almost every church I walked into, the Eucharist was exposed and people were praying. And I was like, I just stumbled into adoration. And at the end of Mass, which was for Christ the King, they did a Eucharistic procession right after Mass, just through the church. And the people were like applauding. They were clapping. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, what beautiful. Like, these are people who went through, you know, it's in their culture, it's in their blood, is the Cristeros movement. And knowing that you can't take your faith for granted, your church for granted, in the history of your people, because they tried to take it away, they tried to destroy it, but they couldn't. And here we are openly and publicly praising the Lord as he processes around in the Eucharist through our church. And so just to see that kind of thanksgiving, and I'm like, the Eucharistic revival has already started, but it might not be in the places that we're, you know, that we're already looking. And so I found in these little churches in the heart of Mexico that I think the Eucharistic revival and thanksgiving is already starting to come back to life. And we just have to put a spotlight on it and start telling those stories and reminding people that the Eucharist is at the heart of our act, not just our action, but our actually becoming people of thanksgiving.
That's Father Tim Grumbach here on Trending with Tim Rayhart on Relevant Radio. Discover the beauty with Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol, brought to you by the Merry Beggars at Relevant Radio. With 25 professional actors, it's the first of its kind audio advent calendar. New episodes of A Christmas Carol will drop daily from December 1st all the way through the 25th. Experience a Christmas classic the way it was intended to be told by Charles Dickens himself in 1843 London. Join your favorite characters from Scrooge to Tiny Tim in this timeless tale. So gather round your radio or computer for the story the whole family can enjoy. Details about the Merry Beggars production of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol can be found at relevantradio.com or the Relevant Radio app. Joining me now here on Trending with Timory, hello, I'm Timory, is Father Tim Grumbach. He is the chaplain at Bishop Alemany High School in the Diocese of Los Angeles. Father Tim, many people have been talking about the Bieber concert that happened last week in what's now known as the metaverse. It seems like anything that's virtual reality related, ever since Mark Zuckerberg's big announcement last month about Facebook now being called Meta and coining the phrase the metaverse, that everyone's tagging metaverse onto anything virtual reality. And so I want to talk a little bit about this 30-minute long Bieber concert in the virtual reality with moves, singing, dancing, even so-called participation, where you could smash by hitting a mashing button with your opportunity. It's kind of like raising a lighter, swinging it side to side, or your cell phone. You know, it's interesting to me, Father Tim, because I was even reading an article at The Stranger by Matt Baum, and he commented that he wanted to write a scathing review of this concert, but after experiencing it, he's like, I didn't hate it.
Oh, this is not what we were made for. That was just the first thing that came to my mind. Is and I think that might come also for me from a place of having to celebrate Mass in an empty, locked church for like a year and a half, it felt like, and knowing, you know, this is not what we were made for. This, you know, we are made for communion and we're made for relationship. And though there, you know, social media and something like this kind of virtual concert can do amazing things to connect us, that, you know, ultimately it's still a bit of a counterfeit of the way things are supposed to be. And it's not, you know, it's not to say it's easy or hard or whatever it is. It's just kind of a product of our times and the decisions that have been made by leadership, that you know, people still want to hear music and they still want to have some kind of experience like they were used to, and so they're going to do it virtually. But we weren't made for this virtual reality. Right now I'm thinking also of, you know, people desiring like a virtual confession. You know, Father, can I FaceTime with you so I can get confession? Can I Zoom in and we can get a confession? And, you know, how beautifully and how vitally important it is right now that the church continue to stand very firmly on the reality. You need to be face to face. You know, we can't fall into this, you know, virtual confession, as efficient as that would be, that this desire to be efficient isn't necessarily tie in with actually being faithful, because we weren't made for this virtual reality, as fascinating as it is.
And again, it's no, not face to face, just not FaceTime.
Right, know? Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Although if you want face to face, you can have that. I remember the first time I walked into confession face to face. I did not know it was going to be happening. And there's this sweet little French priest sitting in a chair, and there's an armchair in front of him waiting for you. And I'm like, oh no, I've already walked in. I can't walk out now. This is terrible. Okay, so I want to continue to unpack this whole idea of transhumanism, the metaverse. I think that one of my big concerns, and you touched on a lot of this, is I think three things. The problem with these virtual reality concerts, with this overemphasis on virtual reality as a whole, or any of our technology use, we've seen this increasing problem of isolation, profound individualism, and the fact that we're missing a shared experience. In other words, it doesn't build community. And I think that across the board, this is a problem, Father Tim, of technology use. We've gone from experiencing things in groups. For example, I was just reminded of this recently. I remember as a little kid, who remembers Sunday night ABC Disney movie night? You would look forward to what it was going to be. It could be Snow White. It could be The Parent Trap. It could be Little Mermaid. And it could be The Muppets. Are The Muppets Disney? Were they? Yeah, they are. It, you know, all of these different movies. Indiana Jones. It was a family-friendly night. Sunday night, we came together as a family around one TV in the living room together. Not isolated, but completely together. Yet today, our technology use has gone from a shared experience to isolated, me-centered pleasure that's like a retreat. And I think that this is where we've coined the phrase me time in our nation. It's from the use of technology. And it really struck me that people were sitting here through this VR experience and how far we've come from even in-person concerts as a kid. I remember my first concert I went to, I think, was an NSYNC concert. Or the Sunday night movie nights. Don't judge me. Sunday night movie nights around the TV watching a Disney movie.
Oh, I'm thinking like, oh, we're going back to public confessions now?
Hey. You know you'd be sliding side to side. We've got the bye-bye-byes going, the side steps. You know, boy bands were a thing before, like, my siblings were listening to boy bands. I have to remind them of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess I have to admit that my first ever live concert, I think it was Gloria Estefan. So, I don't
Hey, she's got a voice.
Yeah, things changed after a while. You know, I have some crazy mosh pit stories. You know, there was a time before seminary. but that experience in itself, you know, one of my favorite types of music is this crazy kind of music called psychobilly, where it's like rockabilly with punk, but it has like horror movie themed style. And so one of my favorite bands is, you know, the singer plays a bass that's shaped like a coffin. It's so bizarre. But you know, you get into a mosh pit and you get into this weird space where people, you're not trying to hurt each other, but you're trying to be moved by the music. And you know, there's a certain kind of venting of frustrations that can happen in that place. But everyone ultimately is looking out for each other. And it's this shared physical experience being moved by the music together. And to go virtual on something like that, like I almost wouldn't even want to go to a concert if there wasn't at least that space to have this kind of shared physical experience, which is kind of a, you know, I don't want to say a counterfeit, but it's a different shade of experience of, you know, what we're ultimately called to in communion. But to be moved by music like that together, this shared physical experience, and that's something that's really missing. But you know, on the other hand, you know, apart from mosh pits and wrecking pits, you know, whatever style of music you may listen to, you know, when we worship together in song, and our hearts are brought together in beautiful, sometimes difficult to sing music, is that it becomes something that we're doing together, and we're sharing that space, and we can really see that God is bringing us together through this experience of music. But for it to all go virtual like that, there's something seriously missing.
Let's tie this into transhumanism for just a moment here. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. That's Father Tim Grumbach here on Trending. This really does relate to the whole transhumanism idea. If you're not familiar with transhumanism, it's all around us, from virtual reality to AI, this idea that the human person can evolve and that the human person can and will go beyond the mind and will go beyond the body, and that will, for example, and this is what's concerning about Mark Zuckerberg's announcement of the metaverse, people are even leading to the point where they believe they will be able to live in the metaverse, upload the brain, and live in this virtual reality, non-reality. And I find it also fascinating, Father Tim, because at the end of the day, what this whole move towards transhumanism and the metaverse, all of it is this desire for connection. It's a desire for the ultimate understanding of, I have a soul, and my soul has a place that it's meant to go to, and a person who it's meant to be connected to, and that is God. Yet they're missing the mark in the face of all of this AI, transhumanism, and even we ourselves, in our use of technology and how isolated and individualistic we become with it.
Yeah, and there's a sadness there, is that trying to maintain for an eternity of sorts something that is not who you really are, right? You know, there might be some kind of way to download memories or some part of our consciousness, but you're not going to be able to download your soul. And so, you know, this attempt to live forever is a counterfeit, and it's a twisting of what it means to really live forever. And it just, you know, brings to my mind the great words of C.S. Lewis, where he points to, you know, the Lord would look at our desires and our passions and would say, not say that they're too great, they're too powerful, but that they're not enough. Our desires are too small. Is that we're like a child, you know, making mud pies who can't even imagine what it's like to spend a holiday on the beach, right? Is that we are desiring this counterfeit eternal life when he has everything more in store for us.
That's Father Tim Grumbach here on Trending with Timmer. You can find him on social media. We'll tag him on Twitter as well as Instagram. You can listen to the show by going to relevantradio.com/trending, where you can subscribe to the podcast, connect on social media, and connect with Father Tim. Just follow me at Timmery. That's TimmerIe. We'll be right back here on Trending. Do you know someone who doesn't want to have a kid? What's this choice about having kids versus not? We'll address the issue of whether or not you're happier if you have children. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Do you know someone who doesn't want to have children? I've been teasing this topic for the last week, and I've received many thoughts and interactions from so many people on it, and that is the topic, are people who have children happier? Now, the point of asking and discussing this were a couple reasons. One, to just ponder the idea, but we didn't really get to finish discussing it yesterday on the show, and so I wanted to unpack it a little bit more today. I think the reason why this conversation is important is we're not talking about the sensitive issue of infertility. We're not talking about people who are maybe not married yet, who want to have children and they're frustrated because they haven't had kids and people are making them feel guilty because they're not married and they don't have kids and they're kind of rubbing it in and making that whole situation worse. What we're talking about is the choice. Two groups of people. People who choose to have children and people who choose not to have children. Yet for some reason, when this conversation often comes up, the focus is on those people who have had negative experiences surrounding having kids. And so I think the whole conversation today should really focus on the question I've been asked a lot recently. How do you convince someone who doesn't want to have children to have children? And I think that that's at the heart of what we're seeing as a problem right now. Now, as you're reminded of this, as I read a recent Atlantic article by psychologist Paul Bloom, who has written and done a lot of work on the topic of searching for meaning in life. He wrote an article titled, What Becoming a Parent Really Does to Your Happiness. And the bottom line is this. He addressed the fact that being a parent doesn't necessarily make you happier. That is, in the sense of pleasure. But being a parent does indeed make you more fulfilled, satisfied, and purposeful. Now, yesterday during our weekly happy hour, I mentioned that a lot of the responses I received on Instagram were people saying that, happy or not necessarily happier, or saying yes, happy, however, not to ignore the fact that it can be very stressful and difficult and sleepless and so on. But at the end of the day, even in the midst of all of those struggles, you find yourself more fulfilled. And I think that that's, I think, the problem when we talk about, are people who have children happier or not? Well, what are we talking about when we discuss happiness? This euphoric, pleasurable feeling that we experience when we eat or any other number of bodily functions people may engage in? Or the feeling we have when we accomplish something at work? You see, research at the end of the day has been inconclusive on the topic of whether or not parents are happier, because everyone's defining happiness differently. In fact, I was fascinated by one of the leading studies that you'll see out there, citing a study published by the National Library of Medicine, where 900 working moms were interviewed. And it was noted that these moms emphasized that they were not happier having children. And they also noted that they were less satisfied and found things less enjoyable. That is when they were with their kids. They preferred things such as watching TV and shopping and cooking for the pleasure experience over their children. That those things were more pleasurable. This was really disheartening to see. And I think that this is a side note in and of itself to the challenge that so many women experience today. This constant dichotomy and pressure between the working world and the stay-at-home life. The house mom, the housewife, and the working mom, the working wife. You know, this whole idea. And many people will say, well, why would I have children? It turns into a debate of who gets to work, who gets to sleep, who does the feeding, who takes time off. And as if marriage is worse, marital satisfactory, all of these things are terrible. You know, and you'll even look at various studies that will talk about, for example, the American Psychological Association published a study talking about, and by the way, I just can't stand the American Psychological Association anymore, especially with so many of the things they promote, such as how masculinity is bad and toxic. So, I mean, we have to be careful. But one of the studies they cited was this topic where they address a subjective well-being and adaptation to life events. And they showed that for many people, they have a drop in happiness after having a baby, after each birth. It also noted a drop in marital satisfaction. But my question again is, well, what are you talking about when it comes to happiness? As a new mom of the last year, yes, your body tends to hurt. Yes, you tend to be tired. There are all these things, if we're talking about on a physical, bodily level, yeah, your body doesn't feel so good. You could do for more sleep. In fact, you love more sleep. There are so many things you could talk about. I mean, my husband and I have talked about, you know, you gain weight that first year of having a kid. You have all these different things that happen. But if we're just defining happiness according to some of these things, well then, yeah, there is going to be a problem at the heart of what we view as a culture in terms of happiness or not when it comes to having kids. What is happiness, I think, is the question. And that's why every week on Monday, if you've never joined us for our weekly happy hour, it's such an important topic. And I think that this is the question. Is happiness all we want? We talked about the four levels of happiness from Father Robert Spitzer at the Magi Center yesterday on trending, and how you go from a material, physical pleasure and desire to a desire ultimately for the infinite, for the perfect, for God, who is transcendent, who transcends all. So coming back to our question at hand, does having kids make you happier? We need to answer this for those who are contemplating not having kids. How do you convince someone? Well, I think at the end of the day, this comes back to the whole idea of how do you define happiness? We have to remove our focus from the idea of pleasure on the level of simple desires, physical comfort. Getting to sleep in. This is the thing I hear over and over from people. It sounds so trivial, but every non-parent I know emphasizes, why would I want kids? I can do what I want when I want, have my hobbies, I get to sleep in. We have to orient and teach this idea of contributing to the world, entering into that contributive purpose, living a life for others. It's fascinating. There's a study done coming out of the Association for Psychological Science, and it talks about fathers' increase in happiness, that it's actually fathers who we see across the board age 26 to 62, that when they have a child, their happiness increases. It spikes. But it's not just their happiness. It's their meaning in life and positive emotion. That they have a different outlook. They have a different purpose. They have a meaning. And I think that this also touches on the dichotomy for so many women and moms and why we see inconsistency. This tug and pull of where am I? Am I a mom? Am I in corporate America? Do I feel better watching TV or getting that raise? Or do I feel better recognizing that, yes, having children, loving children, sacrificing with children is difficult, but it gives purpose. It builds character. It makes me satisfied and fulfilled. Not always necessarily happy in the sense of momentary giddiness, but it does make me a better person. It does make me contribute to the world and have greater desires beyond myself that transform who I am for a positive in life, not a negative. Yet for some reason we tend to narrow in on the sleeplessness and the difficult moments, forgetting about all the joy that life brings with children.